Hope you can join us for one of those shows that's life-affirming, from living your best life to appreciating life. I'm Rhonda McBride, and coming up on Juno Afternoon today, we will check in with Sarah Lewis from the Southeast Cooperative Extension Service about a new program, the Diabetes Supper Club, who can join and how it might help manage diabetes. Why Romeo was more than just a wolf to Juno, a new collection of photographs of Romeo that tell his story. And remembering Juno singer-songwriter Buddy Tabor. It's been 10 years since he's been gone. How his music keeps his memory alive. Some of the conversations coming your way on this Tuesday's Juno Afternoon. The National Weather Service has issued a winter storm warning that will remain in effect through the wee hours of Thursday morning. The heaviest snowfall is expected through tomorrow morning. So get your snow shovels ready. Tonight will not be as cold, with lows in the lower 20s, snowfall tonight with an accumulation of 4 to 6 inches, east winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Now tomorrow, more snow, an accumulation of 2 to 4 inches expected with a total accumulation of 6 to 10 inches. So here's where things get dicey. Freezing rain is in the forecast by the afternoon, highs in the lower 30s. Tomorrow night, that mix of freezing rain and snow is likely to continue. Lows in the lower 30s, east winds around 10 miles per hour. And we won't be done with that combination of rain and snow until Thursday night, but we will make a full transition to rain over the course of Thursday. You can expect snow in the morning, rain by the afternoon near downtown Juneau and Douglas, the snow level around 600 feet, highs climbing to the upper 30s, lows in the mid-30s. Now, Friday through Sunday, more water on top of snow and ice. Rain through Monday, highs in the upper 30s, sometimes near 40 degrees, lows in the mid-30s. Sun rises at 7:57 tomorrow morning, sets at 4:25 in the afternoon. That gives us almost a total of 8 hours, 29 minutes of daylight.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. Our studios sit on ground, once tide lands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. The Hlinedi have stewarded this land for thousands of years, and we would like to take a moment to say thank you to the individuals who helped us craft our daily land acknowledgement. Gunachish to Vera Starbard, Lillian Petershore, and Ishmael Hope, as well as Ernestine Hayes, Bob Sam, and Fran Houston. We are grateful to their help and to all those offering guidance as we grow as an organization. Gunachish for your patience as we learn.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk are ye tin. Jin katka ke jin talk anachaya ha anikach gunachish.
Gunachish for being here with us today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. The Southeast Cooperative Extension Service has had a big focus on wellness in so many ways, and they've been offering diabetes prevention courses in conjunction with Bartlett Hospital for those who haven't yet been diagnosed with diabetes. And now they have a program coming up for those with type 1 and type 2 diagnoses. And Sarah Lewis, a professor with the Extension's Home Health, Family, and Community Development Program, joins us today, and she is been busy trying to put on this program. It sounds exciting. It sounds interesting that you have kind of targeted different groups of people.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And so you know, sometimes we're targeting folks who have sort of the broad range of chronic conditions. But in this case, it's a focus very, you know, closely on those who have been diagnosed with some form of diabetes. And there are lots of things that are similar in terms of, you know, other chronic conditions as well, in terms of managing a chronic lifelong condition. But there are also some things that are very specific to folks who have diabetes, and it's nice to kind of focus in on those.
So why did you separate out the people who were sort of at risk or pre-diabetic versus the ones that actually have a diagnosis?
Absolutely. So type 2 diabetes is preventable. Type 1 diabetes is not. So there are different, let's talk a little bit about the differences between type 1 and type 2. So type 1 diabetes is, we don't even necessarily know what causes it. There are very similar, our body does similar things. In type 1 diabetes, your body is attacking the cells in your pancreas, and so you can't make insulin. Type 2 diabetes, your body is unable to make enough insulin to do the work it needs to do properly. We don't know what causes type 1 diabetes, but we do know things that put you at risk of starting type 2 diabetes. And there are a couple of other types of diabetes as well. Gestational diabetes that happens to some women when they are pregnant. That's another type of sort of a short-term, hopefully self-limiting diabetes. But what we're focusing on in this Southeast Alaska Living with Diabetes Supper Club, we're focusing on folks who have a diagnosis of diabetes, either type 1 or type 2, and we focus in on the lifelong management of those two conditions.
Well, it's very interesting that you have separated them out, and I'm curious about your first group that haven't had the diagnosis. I understand that you are trying to find out some things in this project.
Yes. So if people are familiar with the Health Matters program, the Diabetes Prevention Program, that program has like specific goals that are focused on those risk factors that we know can help folks prevent diabetes. In the Supper Club, what we're focusing on is the long-term management of the symptoms and helping. So it's both for folks who have recently had a diagnosis and are needing to sort of turn their mind to this new way of living that they're going to need to focus on. But it's also for folks who, may have been living with diabetes for years, but maybe don't feel like they're managing it as well as they could right now, or just need a little bit of a refresher on things that you can do to make daily tasks easier, dealing with some of the depression and anxiety that can come with having a chronic condition, communicating effectively with your healthcare providers is something, you know, if you've changed healthcare providers, things like that. Those are all things that this program will look at. It's a 6-part program, so it's over 6 weeks. It'll be on Tuesdays from 5 to 7:30 p.m., which is why we're calling it a supper club. We're actually going to be, and it's entirely on Zoom, so we will actually be, you know, sending folks a recommended, meal to make for yourself and potentially your family. And we do welcome other family members joining in on the sessions. So we're looking to help people get a focus on managing their long-term condition. And food, of course, is always a really big part of that. So we wanted to introduce the idea of a supper club so we can all kind of come together in our remote Zoom way and enjoy a meal together while talking about managing diabetes.
Well, I guess I can't help but mention it, but I am a diabetic that started out as a type 2, and I am what my doctor calls a 1.5, which means I eventually became insulin dependent, and my first sign of it was when I was pregnant. And, of course, the weight gain that comes with pregnancy. And I never really did recover from that. A lot of women can have diabetes during pregnancy and it goes away, but they are at a little higher risk. But one of the things in my experience as a diabetic, and gosh, I've been one for 28 years now, as I think on it, and I think one of the things is that you always kind of get this sense of shame a little bit, or this sense of like, oh, I've done this to myself, or something like that. And it sounds like this, that what you put together is very positive.
Oh, for sure. Yes, you're absolutely right, especially with type 2 diabetes or gestational diabetes. I had gestational diabetes as well. And so that puts me at a significantly higher risk for type 2 diabetes. And there wasn't something that I did during my pregnancy that was wrong. There isn't necessarily something about my lifestyle or someone's lifestyle that that they should, you know, feel guilt or shame that it developed into type 2 diabetes. And so that's definitely something to really, that's part of when we're looking at the diabetes prevention program. It's not a silver bullet. You know, even going through a prevention program and trying to make some changes, just like, you know, when we were pregnant and our bodies started doing different things in that condition, just as if as you age or as your body changes, as your hormones change, et cetera, there are lots of things to be managing in our health nowadays. And so, yeah, being sure never to put any kind of stigma or feeling of shame that there was a failure happened at some point.
But this just sounds
in your life.
Like it could even be fun. But I have to ask you, Sarah, because you put a lot of energy into wellness and preventing diabetes and helping people manage it. Why is it that this has so much of your passion?
Oh, well, goodness.
Aside from because, having been a gestational diabetic, but I mean,
yeah, there's that. There is that. So of course I, you know, you went through needing to do the testing and really focusing on my food for a period of time. And continuing to do that afterwards, but also as an extension agent, one of the things that's really important to us is to be bringing or critical. This is what we do is we bring research and, evidence-based programs to the general public, to folks who are outside of the university system. And this is definitely wellness and with a specific focus on chronic disease and diabetes is a lot of people are affected by them. It's a gap that pretty much always needs to be filled throughout Southeast Alaska because we've got very small communities that don't necessarily have all of the medical professionals that they need. They don't necessarily have all of the lifestyle coaches and the, you know, and the big full library where you can get all the information or the, you know, so there's lots of reasons why the cooperative extension focuses on health and wellness, along with all of our other food preservation and gardening and things like that, because these are all things that make for a more resilient family, you know, person, family, community, region. When we focus on all of these aspects, that's what's important in my district and in all of the districts of anybody who's a cooperative extension agent.
Well, I'm sure that in Alaska, we are seeing higher rates of diabetes than we used to because people probably had much more physically demanding lives 20 years ago or so. And now we have the ease of technology and the temptations of technology. So I imagine that we're seeing our rates go up.
Yep. And the food choices that we have available to us now and the, you know, the promotion of those various food choices, not all of which are the ones that are going to help us be the healthiest. And so weeding through a lot of that stuff, we all need a lot of help with it.
Well, before we run out of time, I do want to talk to you about what you're planning for the summer. I know that with this impending winter storm coming into Juneau, it's hard to think about summer, but I know you always do. And you do something that's really cool. You have a maritime tour that you go on to the communities in Southeast. Was that your idea to come up with that?
It was. After years of not having enough money to get to, you know, from university, et cetera, and other sources to get to my communities in Southeast, and a family love of boating, we just decided to, we needed to put those together and actually do something good with our boat. And so, yeah, I started last year doing the Maritime Extension Program. And this summer, I'm going to be traveling. I'm going to be doing two cruises. The first one will be to Wrangell, Petersburg, and Cake. And I will teach food preservation classes, wellness classes, emergency preparedness, different things the communities have requested. And then I'll be doing a second cruise later on in the summer to, hopefully, it's still in the planning, to Hoonah, Gustavus, Pelican, Haines, and Skagway, and then to the Haines Fair. And the reason I'm bringing this up now, on top of the fact that it's super fun to be planning for the summer and imagining an amazing summer right now, is because anybody who goes to those communities regularly or lives in those communities and you're listening to this, let me know what kinds of classes you'd like me to bring this summer. I love doing that for youth, for adults, in all kinds of different topics, most of which having something to do with food, all the different aspects of food or family and community resilience.
I imagine a lot depends on what's going on in the community, who's doing what. And maybe they say, oh, we need this skill to try this. I mean, what have some of your requests been?
Well, a great one that's happening right now is Cake, because they for years have had some local food preservation experts who have been there for their community, giving out food safety information and stuff, and they're ready to pass that baton. So I'm going to Cake specifically to help sort of, you know, quote unquote, train up some new community members to be those local experts on safe food preservation. And then, you know, in Petersburg, I've been there a couple times in the past. They're very interested in food entrepreneurship. So I'll be working with the Petersburg Market there to come up with some classes. And so food entrepreneurship, small businesses that have to do with food. So, yeah, it's going to be different in different communities, what folks are interested in. But it does turn out, Rhonda, that everybody is interested in food, whatever aspect that might be. So I tend to be, you know, my classes are super fun and I enjoy doing them all year.
So before we run out of time, people are listening. They want to know how they're going to reach you to sign up for these things or let you know what they're interested in. How do they do that?
Yes. The best way is to give me a call at 907-523-3280. Or send me an email at Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, dot Lewis, L-E-W-I-S, at alaska.edu. Those are the ways to get me. I've sent you a flyer. You'll go ahead and post that for the supper club. And so there's contact information on that as well.
That's right. I will post that sometime this evening along with the interviews of our guests. So if they want to listen to your interview again, they can. And they can look at the flyer and get their information there. So, Sarah Lewis, thank you so much for being here with us today. It really sounds like a promising program, your supper club. Sarah is the Family and Community Development Agent for Southeast Alaska. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much, Rhonda.
Later in our program, we'll take time out to remember Buddy Tabor, a Juneau singer-songwriter who left a big hole in Juneau's heart. Here's his song, Cannery Lights.
Oh, the slimers and the butchers cut fish with sharpened knives as blood and scales went down the drain with the best part of our lives. And the bunkhouse standing empty, the men have all gone home.
And on the beach, bald eagles eat dead salmon to the bone. But I can still remember working on the canning machine long before the days of Prudhoe Wealth when the salmon was still king. Long before the days of Prudhoe Wealth when the salmon was still king.
Hi, my name is Casey Heron, and I'm a family medicine doctor at Valley Medical Care. The COVID-19 vaccine is now approved and recommended for all kids ages 5 and up. It is effective and will be key in protecting children from long-term COVID symptoms, hospitalization, and even death. No severe vaccine side effects have been found. Vaccinating your kids will allow them to get back to doing what they love and make Juno safer for everyone. Visit juno.org/vaccine to sign up for a COVID-19 vaccine. For vaccine questions, contact your child's doctor.
This message sponsored by the City and Borough of Juno.
Perseverance Theater presents The Brothers Paranormal by Prince Gomolvias, directed by Randy Reyes, opening February 18th. Love, grief, humor, and horror collide in this haunting tale that is sure to leave you shaking in your seat. For more information, go online to ptalaska.org. The Brothers Paranormal at Perseverance Theater, running February 18th through March 6th. For more information, go online to ptalaska.org.
Coming up, a black wolf who still haunts Juno after all these years. How Romeo will soon come to life at a photo exhibit this Friday. That's Romeo singing. He was captured in a video by Dr. Vic Howard, and so he got the sound. But Romeo unfortunately went silent sometime around a dozen years ago, and they believe that he was killed by some poachers. But this month, through the efforts of the Orpheus Project, we are going to have a chance to reconnect with what Romeo gave to Juno, a tremendous gift. A wolf that skiers and their pets would cross paths with at Mendenhall Glacier. And, of course, you can imagine today even you can find photographs of that, videos. And there will be a very special collection on display this month that will feature some of the best. And joining us now, we have Carrie Howard and Matt Brown, two photographers who took it upon themselves to sift through lots of great photographs and to come up with one collection that will go on display this Friday. So, Carrie and Matt, welcome to Juno Afternoon. And I guess, Carrie, I'm going to start with you and just ask you what this project has been like, because I imagine that that was one well-documented wolf.
Hi, Rhonda. Thanks for having us on today. Yes, Romeo touched the hearts and minds of many, and there are photographs galore, everything from amateur to professional. And when we were approached by board member Emily Kane of the Orpheus Project to curate this exhibit, we were honored to do so because this creature was so special to Juno, and we knew that there were dozens of evocative images out there. So our task was to identify photographers, request they submit photos for consideration, and then Matt and I had the really challenging but satisfying job of selecting the top 20 photos.
Oh my goodness, that must be really difficult. Matt, how did you get through that, going through all the photographs and coming down to just 20?
Well, it like Carrie said, it was a very difficult process, but we wanted to select the photos that best represented Romeo's story here and how he interacted with local residents and their pets. So we came up with 20 photos that we think best represent that story, and then put them together into an album or a book, mind you, a fine art book. And then we have the 20 prints, which will be on display.
So this has been quite a project. So did either of you actually ever see Romeo or interact with him? And, Carrie, let me start with you on that question. Did you know of Romeo?
Oh, yes. I knew of him back in his heyday. I was still working full time, and Matt and I have had this conversation before. When you were fully employed and had other things going on in your life, opportunities to see him were kind of limited to forays being on the lake. But I certainly was aware of him, got to see him on a couple occasions. One, probably the most memorable time being in the fall, way out the road at Herbert River. He paralleled us along the trail as we hiked out one day, and that was just so magical.
That's the word that people use a lot about Romeo, is that he's magical. Matt, what was your experience with Romeo?
Unfortunately, I sought him out many times, but never did see him in the wild. I don't have a pet, and he did like to go up and meet people that had pets and took them around the glacier. Unfortunately, all I had was my camera.
You know, I have the feeling that a lot of people went through that as well, or maybe they didn't have their camera right when Romeo showed up. So you have these 20 wonderful photographs, and you said that they need to tell the story of Romeo, but can you describe some of these photographs to me and why they were chosen? What are we going to see this Friday?
I'll make a comment and then let Matt chime in. You know, we wanted to have a variety of photos, some that really featured Romeo as a creature on his own, but also we wanted photos of Romeo within the environment. So people will see photos that are both close-ups, be it more like portraits of Romeo, and others are really him in the setting, which gives a whole other dimension to the story. And then, of course, also, as Matt had said, Romeo with canines.
I think that's the most amazing part of the Romeo story. But, Matt, what photographs impressed you the most? Because not all of the photos are with Romeo playing with pets.
I guess for me, it's seeing how comfortable he was around domestic canines, people's pets. I know I have a little story, a real quick story. A friend of mine who was also a photographer had his dog, and he was out at the glacier once, and it was the first time he had an interaction with Romeo, and the dog came up, or the wolf came up and started checking out his Labrador, and he thought that was really awesome, but he was afraid the wolf was going to attack his dog. So he ultimately took his dog back and put him in his car, and then came back to get with his camera to get pictures. And Romeo just wasn't interested in the human. He wanted to interact with the dog. So it was really, I think, for those people that had those interactions with him, I think those will live on in their memories forever. Unfortunately, I have to find a different wolf to do that.
Well, that's the good thing about these pictures, is if you were like me and you, because I remember going off in search of Romeo once, and he just got further and further and further away from me till he was a black speck that disappeared in the snow. So I had that Romeo experience, and I had no pet with me. So that's, now I know that's why my feelings aren't hurt. But what I really appreciated about some of these photographs and the close-ups is I always thought that Romeo was a black wolf, but he's actually got kind of auburn highlights. They're
yes,
beautiful.
He's handsome.
Do you think he knew he was handsome?
Yeah, well, you'll see that in the prints that we have. They have a really good. I mean, they turned out amazing. They're going to be up for auction as well. So if people are interested in getting some fine art quality images after this gallery at the end of the month, there will be an online auction that they can go on and they can bid on the various photos after seeing them at the Jack. But his color, yes, he had a black chocolate, mocha chocolate kind of thing going. But yeah, definitely had those brunette highlights. It was just a beautiful wolf.
And his eyes and those highlights. It was, and sometimes it looked like he was posing.
He did.
So can you describe how these photographs are being displayed? Are they just like posters or how do they look?
The photos are all printed on a vivid metal with a matte finish, so they won't reflect any lights. So a metal print is printed on aluminum and they put a white base on it and then they print it out just like a paper print. But metal prints are just super vivid and sharp, and they're wonderful to have in your home. You don't require any framing, so it matches any decor. They're just amazing. All the prints are 16 by 24, except for the lead-in print, which is Romeo's headshot. And that one is what we selected as our main photo. And that one is a 24 by 36.
So that's the marquee photo. One of the photos that I really love was one from Kim Elton. And this is one where, and these are just moments that are captured. Romeo sticking his tongue out at another pet. It's like the chances of capturing that. And then another one, and you'll see this one on our website today, our Juno Afternoon webpage. I posted this really interesting silhouette. It was, you know, the snow and Romeo facing a raven. And so they're black and the sky is black except for the snow. I mean, what are the odds that you're going to get a picture of a raven and Romeo both sitting still and contemplating each other?
You know, Rhonda, an added dimension to the exhibit, obviously the photos are incredible, but we also asked each of the photographers to write a short narrative about what was happening when they took the photo. And the one you mentioned with the raven was taken by photographer Brandon Hauser. And the narrative that Brandon wrote to accompany it is just so powerful and moving. I think people will really enjoy hearing reading the photographer's thoughts while they view the photos. They're fabulous.
So on First Friday for this event, anything special happening with this? Will you have the photographers there to talk about their photos?
We hope to have some of the photographers there. At least two of them are not in town at the moment. So we will have at least a couple photographers there, but members of the board will be there. Matt and I plan to be there, and we'd be happy to talk photography with anyone because we love it.
Well, the one thing that is so fascinating about this whole month is this is just one of many events to celebrate Romeo, and I understand that some other things kick off this month. Apparently, there's a Romeo beer featured at one of the breweries and an art gallery. That's interesting.
Yes. A brew that will be available First Friday event. So if people want to stop by there before or after going to the Jack, they'd be welcome to do so.
So this is at the Juno Arts and Community Center, the Jack. So what time does the opening start?
It will be from 4 to 7, and Jack is following COVID protocols, so only 12 people will be allowed in at a time, and they have to show proof of vaccination and a mask. If people are a little nervous about attending the event itself, the photos will also be up all month and can be viewed 10 to 6 during the week and noon before on the weekends.
So you have one portion of this big month-long celebration. What is the meaning of it all? Matt, what do you think is the thing that you want people to take away from this?
I guess for me, from my interpretation of the Romeo part of the Orpheus Project is just that life is art, you know, wildlife is art in itself, and that you never know where you're going to be when art happens. Carrie is a wonderful example of that. She walks every day and it never ceases to find some piece of art laying around in the wild or in the environment. So this is just highlighting the amazing interactions that Romeo had with the Juno people and how he fits into that bigger art project of why we need to have the arts and celebrate the arts.
And wildlife as well. So
I wanna, and wildlife as well.
Well, I want to yes. thank both of you, Carrie Howard and Matt Brown. They are two photographers that have worked very hard to bring us this exhibit. And so I am, for one, looking forward to seeing these photos and staring Romeo in the eye. Will I be able to do that?
You will be able to see Romeo when you walk through the door.
All right, because I didn't get to see him the day I followed him in the snow. So thank you so much, both of you, for joining us. And good luck with the
thank
exhibit.
You. Thanks so much.
Have you ever been lonely? Have you ever been blue?
Up next, Katie Bosler joins us. She's a volunteer on our sister station, KRNN, and is hosting a show tomorrow night as a tribute to the late, great Buddy Tabor, a Juno singer-songwriter. Here's one of his tunes, Have You Ever Been Lonely? And Buddy, we have been lonesome for you.
I've been praying for sunshine, but here comes the rain.
Well, what a voice, what a warm voice. Boy, it just kind of makes me wish that I knew him. You know, what an amazing man. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, and I want to thank everyone for joining us. We are going to have a very special moment this afternoon remembering Buddy Tabor. Now, he wrote a lot of songs about love, life, and Alaska. And this week, KRNN volunteers and music lovers have been taking time out to remember Buddy Tabor on the 10th anniversary of his death. And tomorrow night, Katie Bosler is going to feature a two-hour special and play some of the conversation that she had with Buddy Tabor just before he died. And Katie, I want to thank you for being here with us today. This two-hour special is a pretty amazing thing that you've compiled all this music and conversations with him. What is it that you love about Buddy Tabor so much?
Well, I think, Rhonda, his music just really speaks to a lot of people on a lot of levels. You know, whether it's you're lonely or you love Alaska or you have some very strong feelings about what should be happening with our country politically. Or ethically. So, you know, Buddy first caught my ear back in 1996.
Wow.
Yeah, at the time I was a reporter here at the time, just of course KTOO. It's still KTOO for news, right? And I was interested in featuring local musicians. And so I had done interviews with someone named Jimmy Waters and Jane Rudenberg, who had put out CDs. And Jimmy Waters, who was a great singer-songwriter in his own right, said, you know, you got to talk to Buddy Tabor. And around that time, 1996, Buddy released his first CD. That was the first of nine that he put out until not long before he passed on in 2012. Now, he had put out a cassette that had Canary Lights on it that you played earlier.
I love the songs about Alaska.
It's
just, you know, and I have to play this one here. it just, to me, is so typical of Buddy Tabor's ability to tell Alaska's story. And, of course, we've got the Iditarod coming up. So this one is called Get Up, Dog.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And this is actually probably his best-known song, was because it was the Iditarod theme song for many years.
Yes, and I think it made it onto national television, mm-hmm. too. So,
yep.
So let's take a quick listen.
Get up, dogs. You ain't tired. With the spirit of this race, we can set this trail on fire. You were born unto the race. Your dogs are just the same. You were made for the winner's circle. It runs inside your veins.
So, boy, that's got a lot of energy. But what I am just amazed, and of course I'm just now discovering him and just wish I had known him and had a chance to hear him, but he was sort of like a staple at the folk festival for, what, 3 decades?
Well, I think there's my mic. you know, Buddy actually came to Alaska in the late 60s, and I think he was one of the first people to play at the folk festival. So he was, we came to Juneau in 1992. So I don't have some of that backstory on Buddy and the folk festival. All I know is he was a folk festival staple stalwart, of course, every year.
And he died fairly young, I guess, which is, you know, relatively young in his late 60s.
Well, and actually he died at 63.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought it was in his late 60s.
And the reason we're talking about this is, you know, Buddy Tabor's, the passing, the transitioning of Buddy to the great folk festival in the sky took place a decade ago, 10 years ago on February 5th. That'll be this Saturday is the anniversary.
Wow. And for people who loved his music, loved his songs, I know that this is going to be a wonderful thing that you have pulled together a program this Wednesday night. So what's your program in honor of Buddy Tabor going to feature?
Yeah, well, first I should just give some props to Martha Scott Stay. She put together a fantastic 2-hour Mudlark sampler on Saturday from noon to 2. Martha not only was a great friend of Buddy's, but she also played music with him, was part of a core group of folks who would get together and play music at the House of Wickersham and in Jeannie Henry's kitchen downtown and at the Folk Festival, of course. And my program will be a little bit different. She, in her program, featured a lot of his tunes, his influences, people who had covered his music and some of his life story. I knew Buddy more as a reporter and someone who was a fan and really loved his music. And so program. I host Stormy Weather 9 to 11 on KRNN Wednesday nights. I alternate with Carolyn Miner, my alternate co-host. So I'll be doing the program tomorrow night. And what I'm doing, Rhonda, is I did at least 3, if not 4, interviews with Buddy about his music over the course of when I knew him, which was, as again, 1996 until he passed on in 2012. So the first one I don't have because it's on reel-to-reel tape under my stairs and on its way to the State Museum. I just got to rustle it up. But in 2004, Buddy put out a typical for him, his Edge of Despair album. He called it a children's album, tongue-in-cheek. And I did an interview with him and featured some of the songs on that album, including Have You Ever Been Lonely? I know one of the tunes that you have pulled. So I'll play that. It's like a 5-6 minute music feature, the kind of, you know, you hear on public radio. Also, I have of course been listening to this a lot the last few days. December 16th, 2011. Buddy was, this is now a couple of months before he passed on, He came to the studio when I was hosting the Tideline program. That's the evening 5 to 7 program as a volunteer GJ on KRNN. And he co-hosted the program with me. And we did kind of an interview and shared some poetry over the course of an hour. I'll play part of that session, probably about half of it. And at the time, he had just come off his and returned from his what would be seventh trip to Folsom Prison down in California, where, as most famous for Johnny Cash performing.
Right.
So the story here, and it's a pretty cool story, is that 2004 feature I did on Buddy and that album Edge of Despair was on Alaska Public Radio Network on, of course, Alaska News Nightly. And there was a volunteer DJ who's also an Alaska fan, Sherry Snook, down at a public station in Grass Valley, California, near Folsom Prison. She heard that story. She invited Buddy to come work with prisoners in their Arts in the Prison program. And Buddy made a pilgrimage to Folsom Prison between 2005 and 2012 every year. And he would perform for the prisoners. It was a very intimate kind of setting, classroom setting, and they would share their poetry and their music with him. And it was quite an extraordinary thing. We had a cut that we were unable to play, unfortunately, because of technical difficulties. But in that cut, and you'll hear it tomorrow night if you tune into the program, he says, you know what? I got a lot more from them than I gave, you know. So the exchange, you know, was I think a really heartwarming thing for him, because these were people who, some of them were, a lot of them were life in prison. And when he talked, we talked a lot about that on this program that you're going to hear tomorrow night, that last show with me on Tideline, where he was unable to see some of his friends. Because they were in lockdown.
This particular interview that you're going to be airing is one that was very close to the time of his death, right?
Yes, yes. So, yes, exactly.
And you knew that.
Yes, yes. So it's there's a lot of love and a lot of emotion there. And also the prisoners had shared some goodbyes and some poetry. The kind of tributes to Buddy that he was in. He didn't feel up to performing or reading some of the poetry of the prisoners on the air. So I did it.
Wow! Yeah. And in that last trip, though, he didn't perform. Right? He wasn't well enough to do that.
No, but he was able to say goodbye to some people. But he was. I'm kind of heartbroken that he wasn't unable to say goodbye to some of. Hit the people he was closest to, because when they have an issue there and go into lockdown, even if you did start it, you're in lockdown.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you get an insight into how big this man's heart is.
Yeah, yeah. But it's also really one of his biggest influences, in addition to Bob Dylan, Townes Van Zandt, Reverend Gary Davis, was Johnny Cash. And we did talk about, you know, hey, you and Johnny Cash both went to Folsom Prison. Well, of course, he's, you know, but he said, well, yeah, well, Johnny Cash made a gazillion dollars and I didn't. But he recognized that he was paid in the gratitude of the people that he connected with, the artists and the poets and the musicians who were behind Bars for Life.
And I think that is something that says a lot about Buddy Tabor, what his values are. And, of course, like you said, some of his songs are political. Some of them are just, you know, your basic country western sob story song, Lost Love.
Mm-hmm. Hank Williams was a big influence of his. And he actually has one of his songs is a cover. Another one is, you know, with apologies to Hank Williams.
And some of them are just funny.
Yes. Oh, very. He was very self-deprecating.
Kind of in a John Prine mode.
Well, John Prine was another influence. And as a matter of fact, you'll hear a little bit of John Prine tomorrow night, because in addition to the poetry from the prisoners and the songs that they shared, Buddy brought in a box set of archival gospel tunes that he'd been listening to not surprisingly, maybe, because he was, you know, a couple months away from passing on, and we played some of that as well. Tunes from the 30s.
What's it like to do an interview with somebody you really love and admire and know that it could very well be the last time you get to talk to them?
Well, you know, with Buddy, it wasn't so bad because he also was very clear that he had a pretty morbid sense of humor. And from the get-go, you know, he was, even before he was diagnosed with lung cancer, it was kind of like, you know, I'm going to die soon, so I better get this done. And as Martha pointed out on the show on Saturday,
Martha Stay,
he did start smoking when he was 12 years old.
And maybe that's why he kind of has that sort of raspy, smoky voice,
sure.
I guess. And I guess he paid a price for that. But one of the things that I have heard said is that he is somebody that really could have been a national performer. I mean, some of his stuff did have glimmers of exposure on the national scene, but he was right up there with the John Prines and others in his ability to write a song and have moments with those songs.
Yeah, and I think that was one of his regrets, that he didn't, in quotes, make it. But he also, you know, he was particular. He would not perform in bars. And, you know, sometimes...
Why? What was his reason?
Because people weren't listening. And, you know, that's maybe comes with the territory because, you know, there is a singer-songwriter circuit where part of it is playing in bars.
I mean, most singers want to play in bars so they can get paid.
where people are not listening to you no matter how good you are. Or how amazing your poetic lyrics are, they're laughing and with their friends, and that kind of comes with the territory. But he wasn't interested in that.
So what did he do for his day job?
Well, his last day job was he was a painter, a house painter. You know, he was the singing house painter from Douglas, Alaska. He came to Alaska in, I think it was the late 60s, to work on the pipeline. He also worked for the state. He, I think, owned what was called the Orpheum Theater Co. owned at one point. He had a lot of different gigs. And as long as I knew him, he was a house painter, in addition to being a prolific singer-songwriter.
It's interesting because another singer-songwriter that comes to mind who just passed is Hobo Jim. And he was another one who, you know, had a lot of direct experience working in fisheries, being kind of a grassroots, blue collar sort of guy, writing these amazing grassroots songs. Mm-hmm. His songs, Buddy's songs, just kind of preparing for the show and listening to the different pieces. I mean, there is a wide range of stuff there.
Oh, yeah.
From these thoughtful ballads to, you know, these silly songs that you have or just truly deliciously Alaska songs.
Yeah.
So what is the common denominator in your mind after kind of knowing him so well and being so familiar with his music?
Well, kind of my, waving my finger in the air and seeing which way the wind is blowing. My motto is I play music as a volunteer DJ that moves me. And if it moves me, I hope it moves you, the listener. So I think that's the common denominator is those, and it's an it factor, I guess you'd say. Where some singer-songwriters, you hear their music and you go, eh. Other ones, you know, that lyric, whatever they're saying or however it musically comes across, something clicks in you, in your heart or your soul. Yeah, I get that. That makes sense.
So what do you think ultimately his legacy will be? Because I don't think he was really big into self-promotion. It doesn't really sound like that. And so the people in Juneau who remember him, of course, we are all getting on in years, people like yourself and Martha Scott, Martha
really?
Scott Stay.
No.
But, I mean, younger generation is not going to get to hear them unless they're listening to KRNN and your show.
Yeah, and speaking of the younger generation, I mean, I know – my kids, they're far from kids anymore, but they first heard Buddy Tabor when they were 8 and 10 years old, and they loved him. They loved that music. So there's a lot of people who have come through and grown up in Juneau who grew up with Buddy Tabor. Now, for those of you who are listening who have never heard of this guy and wondering, what are you talking about, you can hear his music on Apple and on Amazon. Someone had the wherewithal to put together in a three-part anthology of his songs, which last I counted, there were about 70 songs.
There's so many, and they're all different.
Between three CDs, if you will, or albums on Amazon or Apple. And interestingly enough, Buddy never was on Spotify. And he'd probably be just fine with that.
You know, I somehow have a feeling that that would be the case. So what do you think Buddy would want us to say about him? How do you think he would want us to remember him 10 years after his death?
Well, I think what strikes me, especially now that I am in the last third, at least, of my life, like a lot of us, a lot of you listening, is that he had the drive and to know that he had something to leave behind, and he left it behind in spades. And we can still listen to that music. We can still hear his voice. And what he had to say about the world. And the thing, too, is a lot of his music speaks very clearly to what is happening right now in this country, the division and the craziness. He saw it all coming, and he wrote and sang about it.
And there's a lot of compassion, too, in his songs, which I think that's maybe what draws me to what I've heard so far is that this is a big heart. This is a big soul.
Yes.
And
yes.
You only come across somebody like this once in a while. I wonder if this has ever been done in Juneau, and maybe it was done shortly after he passed, has a younger generation of musicians like each picked a song and put together a concert. Wouldn't that be fun?
Well, and you know what? That's not a bad idea, and that might be something to put forth to the Alaska Folk Festival Board. Not a bad idea. And also, I mean, I think that these songs, maybe it hasn't quite happened yet, but at some point, an artist of national stature is going to discover this writing and this music and cover it and put it out there. And it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Well, this one that I want to play going out here, Miles to Go, because I think it's kind of an appropriate way to send people off out of Juneau Afternoon. But, I mean, it's got the classic tagline. Great hook line.
And that's, I think, from the CD Earth in the Sky.
All right, so wrapping things up and to remind people what time to tune into your special.
This will be Stormy Weather on KRNN tomorrow night from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. I'll spend the better part of the first hour on Buddy Tabor. It might be the whole show. If any of you listening have a favorite Buddy Tabor tune, please post it on the Katie Bosler Facebook page if you're on Facebook, or you can find me somehow. And that's on KRNN.org from anywhere, 103.1 downtown in Douglas and 102.7 in the Valley and Ock Bay.
All right. So tune into that. And here we go. Buddy Tabor singing Miles to Go.
There's a line that's drawn through this life of beauty and fear. Sometimes it seems so far away, sometimes it seems so near. When the spirit and flesh are torn between the earth and
sky. As we go through the days and the hours and the minutes of our lives, you may be weary, you may be feeling low. Your life might be out of a line, but you still got miles to go, miles to go, miles to go. Between the earth and the sky and the moment we die, we still got miles.